The amount of money you make can have a big impact on your social circles. That may always be true, but according to recent research, it's more true now than in recent history. Americans are less and less likely to interact with people from different income levels. That can make it hard to understand one another. It can also impact what you think other Americans' lives look like. One example, The Atlantic recently commissioned a study asking people what percentage of people still worked from home during the pandemic. The people who work remotely tended to massively overestimate how many other people were doing the same. Our next guest says interactions and experiences with people across income and wealth and racial lines are becoming increasingly rare. The result is that we normalize our own experiences and misunderstand one another. You can join in at 800-642-1234. When you think about your own circle of friends and coworkers and whatnot, do you interact much with people who make different amounts of money, a lot more or a lot less than you do? Did it used to be different in your life, do you think? Do you worry that we just don't know much about each other anymore if we're not interacting with each other? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. Jonathan Meiss teaches sociology at Boston University and is working on a book tentatively titled The Inequality Paradox, Why the Growing Gap Leaves Us Less Concerned. Jonathan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, John. Rob.
Let's talk about that example I just gave from The Atlantic. You're quoted in that piece. Those work-from-home people, they're a particular type of job, and they kind of assume, since they move in circles similar to their own, that a lot of people, everybody's in that kind of position. Is this an example of the kind of misjudgment we can make when we don't interact with people different than ourselves?
No, that's absolutely right. There's a lot of research showing that we hold a lot of misperceptions when it comes to matters of economic inequality. We tend to sort of draw on our own experiences, on what we know from people around us, our loved ones, our family, our neighbors, and sometimes project their experiences and our experiences to the entire society that we live in, and kind of infer or conclude that most people must be going through something similar. Now, when we surround ourselves with people with the same kind of levels of education we have, roughly same levels of income, et cetera, then the world that we inhabit looks very different from our society, but we're unable to see that difference.
Can you talk about the trends over time when it comes to how much we segregate ourselves socioeconomically? How much worse have things gotten over the last few decades?
Yeah, so with former students of mine, we asked basically ourselves, we know that economic inequality has really grown in the last 30, 40 years, but what about socioeconomic segregation? So what about the extent to which people from different income levels, different ends of the social ladder, if you will, are they interacting with each other? Are they meeting each other at the same rate now as they did some 40 some years ago? Or in other words, like, how did growing inequality, how did that impact sort of our social lives and spatially sort of how we're situated? And what we find is that people of different sort of in different income groups are less and less likely to interact with each other, to be in the same workplaces, less likely to live in the same neighborhoods, increasingly go to different schools, but also their social networks, like the friends that they have, the romantic partners that they find, also increasingly come from kind of the same economic backgrounds. So that means that, again, the world that we inhabit looks a lot more like us than the true diversity of our society.
What's driving that? Are we sorting ourselves out? As I've heard from some other studies, are we sorting ourselves out by where we live? And is that a big driver of this?
Yeah, that's absolutely a big factor here, right? So processes like gentrification that are pricing people out of certain neighborhoods, There's also a degree of, think of it as higher stakes when it comes to, for instance, basically an increased competition for attending the right kind of schools that really pay off and help you in the rest of your career. Whereas it used to be that just having a college degree was sort of a guarantee for middle-class life. That's no longer the case. It's all about which college you go to, what kind of credentials you have. It's really interesting how people have come to increasingly sort themselves. For instance, when it comes to romantic relationships, when it comes to dating, why education and why income has become a bigger factor in that process. I think that's an open question, but clearly that is the process that we're seeing.
We're talking to Jonathan Meist from Boston University, sociologist there. We're looking at income inequality in the United States, but not just the money part of it, the socializing part of it. People from different economic backgrounds over time are hanging out with each other less, working with each other less, going to school together less, marrying each other less. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you fighting that trend? Do you have a social setting where you hang out with people from different backgrounds than you? What is it? What makes it work for you? Did you marry across the bounds of class? Or do you see this happening in your life, this sorting out? Do you see it as a problem? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Jonathan, I wonder how aware people would be that this is even happening, because I think on the world stage, Americans are known for not talking about class, not talking a lot about how much money we make. How much of this is happening without people even really noticing it?
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, there's a couple of things that sort of make it so that a lot of people don't really care about growing economic inequality. Part of it is that most Americans think of themselves as being in the middle class, even though they're close or at what government considers to be the poverty line. A lot of people still identify as middle class. Not a lot of people think of themselves as poor, as working class. And another part is that there still is pretty widespread belief in the American dream. This idea that if only you work hard enough, you're going to make it somehow. So that if you don't find yourself in, you know, perfect economic circumstances today, maybe that'll change tomorrow. You got to sort of have some faith in that. So that's something that maybe keeps people from being too concerned or too worried. Whether that's the reality, that's a whole nother matter, of course. But my research suggests that beyond these factors, the fact that the economic divide has sort of become a social divide, that really makes it harder for us to have a good understanding of what other people's lives across the economic divide look like. It makes it harder for us to develop empathy, solidarity. And that is, that's a serious problem, I think, leading to people really underestimate just how much inequality there really is.
Staying with the impact side of things, one thing on my mind a lot is, what if you have one profession like, say, the media, where a lot of people come from similar backgrounds, similar economic backgrounds in particular? I think back, you know, post-World War II, the GI Bill brought a lot of working class people into the media. There may not be that road anymore. A lot of times it's unpaid internships that people can't afford if they don't have the money to live without an income. Do you worry if a group like the media has this tunnel vision because they're not coming from different backgrounds?
Yeah, I think that could be the case. I mean, obviously, as journalists, as academics, part of the job is challenging yourself, challenging your preconceptions, and putting yourself out in sort of different situations, seeking out new information, right? So that's, I think, very much part of what you're supposed to be doing as a good journalist, as well as a good academic. But we are ourselves subject to these same processes. In Boston too, you know, like that's also a city that's very much socioeconomically segregated, where the people that I encounter on a daily basis at the university, but also in my neighborhood, are also like not a great representation of of the, you know, actual diversity of our society. So it takes a lot of work actually to sort of break through cross these kind of socioeconomic fault lines, because so much of our society has been organized based on these economic principles.
We're talking with Jonathan Mice. He teaches sociology at Boston University, working on a book tentatively titled The Inequality Paradox, Why the Growing Gap Leaves Us Less Concerned. We're talking about why we tend to misunderstand the experiences of other Americans as economic inequality grows and we don't associate with one another if we have different economic backgrounds. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel this ever in your life, that you have this kind of bubble of people who are at least somewhat similar in how you grew up? Do you have some venue in your life where you meet people from other walks of life? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation, hear from you, take some of your calls coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with Jonathan Mice, assistant professor of sociology at Boston University. He's with us to talk about growing levels of economic inequality and why we don't associate with people different than ourselves that much and the impact that can have. You can join in with your own story at 800-642-1234 or your questions, 800-642-1234. Let's go to our callers now. Randy is with us in Ripon. Randy, hi.
Hi. Boy, this is a great subject. I was thinking about while I was waiting here is our previous president really spoke at a level that appealed to a lot of lower class, blue collar. I'm going to come across as probably, I don't know, judgmental here, but I can see, and I'm blue collar myself, and I can see how that appealed to a lot of, you know, lesser educated folks that feel as though they're being talked down when you use syllable word verbiage with them. And I think that appealed to them, even though, you know, he was educated, but, and he was obviously wealthy, but I think it has a lot to do with education as well. And I think that also plays a role. I don't know if it's so much wealth. But
Randy, thanks a lot for the call, breaking up a little bit there. But Jonathan, I mean, are we speaking a different language to some extent between one socioeconomic group and another, as our caller's kind of pointing to there?
Oh, there's definitely some sort of elitism. You see that in politics, in science, in journalism, that perhaps doesn't make it easier. But I think the real sort of important thing that that disconnects people is that there are just fewer opportunities for interactions in, you know, fewer sort of communal meeting grounds, public places. It's just harder to just run into people from different walks of life. And the pandemic obviously hasn't made things any better.
Thanks a lot for that call, Randy, at 800-642-1234. We'll go to JJ now in Madison. JJ, hi.
Hello. So I guess I have a lot more than I could really ask on the radio show, and I'll just have to buy the book and read it when it comes out. But I was wondering two specific things. First off, is this, like, specifically an American issue? Has there been any kind of study into the European countries or Eastern countries about if they have the same social divide as they do comparatively and economically? And then the other part is, what's the way back out of it? How do we start being a homogenous group again, besides, like, you know, fixing income inequality? Is there really any way to do anything about it besides, you know, making people have similar levels of pay and education?
JJ, two big questions there, Jonathan. First of all, that international perspective, are we unique at this in the United States, or are other, especially so-called developed countries, experiencing the same thing?
Yeah, those are really great questions, JJ. I kind of assumed that maybe this was an American issue. I mean, the United States is definitely known for having really high levels of wealth inequality and income inequality compared to other nations. And those are really, really strongly tied with economic segregation, educational segregation. So I think I should test this assumption. So I started working on this project with a colleague in Sweden. Many of us know Sweden to be a very egalitarian country. But in fact, Sweden in the last 25 years or so has also grown increasingly unequal, economically speaking. So we asked, has this sort of increase in inequality in Sweden, this very different setting, has that gone hand in hand with growing rates of segregation, of a greater disconnect between rich and poor in this society as well, socially speaking, spatially speaking? And our preliminary evidence suggests that yes, it has, that we're seeing a very similar process in a very dissimilar context.
And then the question of what we do about it. It doesn't seem like an easy boat to turn here.
Yeah, so I think JJ put it as a question of how do we get more homogeneous. I think maybe the problem is actually that many of our social sort of networks and environments are actually much more homogeneous than the diversity and heterogeneity of our society is. And we kind of need to think about maybe ways of making our networks, making our neighborhoods, making our schools and our workplaces more heterogeneous. And I think that is, that really, like I was saying before, requires more investment in public places and meeting grounds. It requires more efforts to integrate, socioeconomically speaking, schools, neighborhoods, bring people from various walks of life together so they can learn from each other. They can see what other people's lives are like. I think that would be a great step in the right direction.
Thanks for that call, Richard. We're talking to Jonathan Mize, sociologist at Boston University, looking at economic inequality in the United States and why people from different economic backgrounds are less and less likely over time to interact with each other in a lot of different ways. Back to your calls now with Denny in Wapaka. Denny, hi.
Hi. You know, I just wanted to say I'm an older fella. I still run my business. I know people on both sides of the political aisle, all ages, from teenagers to into their 80s, and economic persuasion. And it is stunning to me about how little they know about each other. I go to two different craft breweries. One is all on the right side of the aisle. The other is all on the left side of the aisle. And how you get people talking to each other, I'm open to suggestions. I just heard your guest, and but we got to figure it out.
Well, you'd think, Denny, the shared love of craft beer might be an opening. Do you think there's something there?
I try to go to both breweries and love it either way. So for me, it works.
Denny, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Well, we even sort ourselves out, Jonathan, by our favorite craft breweries. But Denny's pointing to this as a political divide as well. Do you think that's part of the problem here, that because we don't know people from different economic groups, this might be part of our partisan divide as well?
Yeah, I do think it feeds into partisan divides. There's pretty compelling research that suggests that a typical Democrat and a typical Republican kind of have different fallback positions, sort of take on a whole different set of assumptions about what it means, for instance, for a person to be poor, why that person has gotten into that situation requiring need. And it's the way that people's assumptions then sort of help them make sense of the situation that leads them to oppose or support, government intervention. But once you start sort of taking away those assumptions and actually giving people an understanding of what's happening in any given situation or to any given person, those political differences start fading away, and people agree on a whole lot more than they do in the absence of sharing the same experience and having the same information.
Thanks for that call. And just our last minute, I've talked to people who have made on the show, who have made efforts to try to bring together people of different backgrounds. And it sounds cool and all, but is that just yelling at the tide to try to make it go the other way? Is this something that we're not going to be able to turn back just with sort of individual efforts like that?
I mean, I think it starts with sort of venturing into different spaces, whether that's the brewery. I play a lot of soccer, and I play soccer with anyone who's interested in playing soccer. I meet people from countries all over the world all the time. And I think those are really important activities that can bring people together.
Jonathan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Jonathan Mize teaches sociology at Boston University and is working on a book tentatively titled The Inequality Paradox, Why the Growing Gap Leaves Us Less Concerned. We've been talking about why people from different economic backgrounds over time are less and less likely to interact with one another, work together, go to school together, marry one another. Still time to share your story. Do you have a place in your life where you do meet a lot of people from different backgrounds? What is it? How does it go? Do you feel good that it's a part of your life? You can email us, ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Love to hear your story.